Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, made me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years, they're prejudiced. Foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Your World News in conjunction with the Nimbrew Media Collective. I'm your host, Salman Kamajan, and I should say co-host because joined in studio again. I have another student co-host, a journalism major, who is this is her first foray on the program, but this is not going to be the last one. You know, she's going to be coming on the show, times and times, moving forward. And so it's a pleasure to welcome into the studio Princess Tassie, who is originally from Cameroon. She was a journalism major at the University of Maryland, on point, very competitive journalism school. And I just want to welcome you on. How do you feel?
I feel good. I'm excited.
Good.
I'm excited. I've been researching. I'm ready to talk about this. I'm really excited to talk. I don't know. I'm just excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
No problem. This show is yours as well. Looking forward to having you as a co-host moving forward, you know, as many shows that your schedule permits. And so, you know, as she alluded, this, as long as we continue to have issues of police violence, police terror, police brutality, whatever terminology one wants to use, I often use police terrorism because it is a tactic of fear. And, you know, we saw with Tyre Nichols, you know, we've seen with George Floyd, we've seen with Eric Garner. We can just go on and on. Sandra Bland, you know, Amad Diallo years ago, Sean Bell, Oscar Grant. I mean, and the problem is the fact that I can actually continue to go on for another several minutes and still not come to the end of a list, that tells you this is an issue. You know, that tells you that this is an issue. And you know, we should be against police brutality in any shape, form, or fashion, but it's important to note that it disproportionately impacts Black communities. So, for instance, last year in the United States of America, there were over 1,182 murders that were, you know, committed by police in the United States, right? You know, we represent 13%. When I say we, I'm talking about Black people, people of African ancestry, so-called African Americans, represent 26% of the overall population. I mean, 13% of the overall population, but 26% of the police murders were Black people. That's disproportionate. We haven't even started to talk about Latinos, Latinx people. And so someone might say, well, you know, what about, you know, people that have guns? You know, certainly we want to bring that up, right? So the majority, and I always like to give people a reference. There's a really good website called Mapping Police Violence. And I believe they're based out of Southern California, Mapping Police Violence. And so even they have right now, like in 2023, right now, in this year, 158 people have been killed by the police. Last year, over 1,182 people were killed by the police. And actually, the majority of people that were killed by the police were killed in stops, like things that did not involve a gun, that were nonviolent, that should have been nonviolent encounters, where somebody at the house, you know, had somebody that had a mental health issue. They were unarmed. Next thing you know, police come, you know, somebody's dead later on. Traffic stops where somebody was on a traffic stop where somebody's waving a gun outside the window. And so they break it down. They break it down in like really clear fashion. So please visit that website because data matters. Data matters. Perspectives matter. Perspectives matter. Like my perspective as a Black man in this country, my perspective matters in terms of what I've dealt with, you know, and I don't have a jail record of any kind, any shape, form, or fashion, but, you know, my perspective in terms of what I feel when I'm stopped by the police, knowing that at any moment I know that it's my word against theirs, and if it's the wrong police officer, then they can do what they want, and in a lot of cases get away with it, you know, with impunity. And I'll stop here. One other thing that really, really should be mentioned is that the vast majority of police that murder somebody and murder somebody unarmed, right? 98% of them never even get adjudicated. 98% of them never get adjudicated. So justice is never meted out in the vast majority of cases. And so I would think, like I would like to say that if there was more accountability to police that murder people in cold blood or murder people because they use vast excessive force, as we saw with Tyre Nichols, right? As we saw with Eric Garner, as we saw with Mike Brown. If there was accountability the same way there would be accountability if myself or Princess did something of that nature, right? we would be adjudicated, boom, right, you know, just like that. We'd be behind bars, issued no bail, no bond. And if police had to face those same type, that same type of scrutiny, that same type of accountability, I would like to think that those numbers would drop precipitously in a very, very quick fashion. But the reason they don't is because a lot of police know that, hey, I can get with it. And we can only imagine, what about the cases where somebody didn't have a camera phone, right? There was a time when people didn't have camera phones. And all those cases, and it was the police officer's word against the victim's word. You know, the person that would say, you know, say, oh, well, he was struggling with me, and he pulled out a gun and so forth. And well, I would venture to believe that in a lot of those cases, that's not how it went down. Remember Walter Scott, Princess, several years ago, there was a brother in South Carolina named Walter Scott.
Yeah.
And he was murdered by a police officer in Charleston, South Carolina. The narrative was immediately that this black man was wrestling with the police officer and tried to grab his gun, so the police officer had no other recourse but to shoot him in the back several times. So he told his superior officer that. Superior officer believed it. That was the narrative. It was put out by the news. The news, you're a journalist, right? So
yeah.
There's a lot of irresponsible journalists, because the majority of time, and I'm glad you're coming into the field, because a vast majority of journalists, when this something is a police report is put out, they don't ask any questions. They don't do their due diligence. They don't investigate it. They just believe it. And so in this case, the local news stations, they believed it. Guess what happens? Because of that, there was a person in the park, because this happened in broad daylight. There was a person in the park, saw this on TV and said, that's not what happened. And he caught it on video. He caught it on video with his camera phone, an actual video. He came forward. That video led to that police officer being adjudicated. The police department had to eat crow and do a mea culpa and come out and say, you know, oh yeah, you know, we were wrong, and this police officer is now behind bars. He got sentenced. I can't remember how many years. It should have been life, but it's not life. It might be like something like 20 years. And what the video showed was this police officer chasing this black man unarmed and shot him several times in the back in cold blood as he was running away. And so, and obviously that's like, you know, that's cold-blooded murder. That's assassination. And so he was arrested and so forth. Yeah.
And when it comes to accountability in the police department, for I read recently for the George Floyd murder, Derek Chauvin, who had his knee on George Floyd's neck, mm-hmm. when we go back and look at his records, we see that prior to that, he had 18 misconduct files against him. So if they had acted like before that, if the police force was not so hell-bent on protecting officers who are wrongdoers, then we wouldn't have to lose George Floyd.
Exactly.
And also when it comes to like data reported, a lot of, like when I read this book, Shooter from Justice by Allison Collins, and she's with the Human Rights Watch,
mm-hmm.
A lot of police officers, it's not mandatory for them to report data. It's not mandatory. Only 40% of them do.
Yeah.
And even data that comes from like the FBI, from investigations that they do for like cases, and even when they do investigations, it's only for like high-profile cases. They never, unless like it has public attention, they don't really do anything about it, or they don't really prosecute the officers. And even like stations don't share that data, where a police officer can have something filed against him and he gets fired from there, but he can go get hired by another police station, and that's just how it's just like a bad apple goes from a different place and stuff. But then when we talk about individual officers, I do believe that they need to be like held accountable, but at some point we have to turn and look at the justice system,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. yeah, this individual can put one behind bars, but then that another one's just going to replace them. And then the cycle continues. So we have, it's just like the matter of collecting data.
Yeah.
The matter of reporting data, of having this out in the open, the matter of being like, put your body cams on, like you're going to get punishment if you don't.
Yeah.
The matter of
yeah.
don't pull out your gun, because it makes no sense to me why your first instinct is to pull out your gun. You have a taser right there.
Yeah.
You should have the training to be able to subdue a person without using deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
That's your job as a police officer. The like even for mental health issues, they don't have the patience to deal with that. They're not trained for that. I feel like anyone can become a police officer these days. It doesn't take much training.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most demanding jobs you can have
mm-hmm.
as a public servant.
That's a public servant,
and you don't have that training. How does that make sense?
Exactly.
That's why we have so many people who get killed, because they don't have patience. They're not trained to have patients.
Exactly.
They don't go through evaluations. I feel like...
Psych, exactly.
They don't look into their backgrounds mm-hmm. enough. Like, we have a lot of police officers that have white supremacist backgrounds. And also mm-hmm. with the recent killing of Trey Nichols,
mm-hmm.
we see it was by black officers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are like trying to use that to say that, oh, it's not a matter of like racism. But it's also like, no, just because you're black does not absolve you from being racist. You can still be racist to other black people because the institution has put that in your head. They've trained you to see other black people like
mm-hmm.
that. It's like a matter of hierarchy, you know. As long as you're part of that institution,
exactly.
you're one of them.
Exactly.
It does not matter if you see them. Like when George Floyd was killed, there were two people of color. There were two Asian officers there.
Right.
It was not just all white people. It's like, it's the matter of the institution itself. And so I think that if anyone really wants to understand it in depth and they're a reader,
mm-hmm.
they should really read Shielded from Justice by Alison Cox, because she really breaks it down good, and she has all the data here. No matter how difficult it was to get data, she did the study over the course of 2.5 years.
What's the name of the book again?
It's called... Human Rights Violations in the United States, Shielded from Justice, Police Brutality and Accountability in the United States. And it's a really good read for anyone
yeah.
who just wants to have it on hand to
mm-hmm.
just reference from.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like 20 cities, maybe a little less, that she went and she got data from and
mm-hmm.
about police brutality, and she broke it down and she really, really evaluated it. So if
yeah.
anyone wants to read that, that's a good tool.
Yeah, and you picked up in the library. So, you know, imagine people,
exactly.
you know, can get it from the library.
It's at our fingertips. You just have to look for it. You
yeah.
just have to be open-minded to it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a good point that Francis brings up. I mean, this is life or death. I mean, this is life. And if you were in that position where, you know, God forbid something happened to you, you got brutalized by the police, you would want there to be justice, and you'd want people to be up in arms and to do something about it. So let's not just sit and spend all our time on social media just looking at you know, entertainment. Find balance, all right? You know, everyone likes to be entertained once in a while, but find balance. You know, she just referenced this book. So look up the book, you know, check it out. Start reading it. You know, start to familiarize yourself with this data and the issue in a more contextual level, because people that are uneducated, you mentioned that, people that are uneducated, right, about, and I don't mean, because we're all uneducated about something, but that's the key. Like, I'm uneducated by a lot of things. When I find out I'm uneducated by something, I want to do the research so I can become educated in that. So there are a lot of people that are uneducated about structural racism in this country, and that's by design. This country does not, in general, does not want a mass of people to be educated about structural racism. And, you know, they want people to think about, oh, racism is just someone being called the N-word or some other racial epithet, racist epithet. And that way people can think of, oh, racism can just be ended by teaching people not to say the N-word. No, but racism is much deeper than that. Racism is power plus prejudice. It means that, you know, that in this country, white people have the power. It's not just, it's one thing if they hate Princess and I. It's
yeah.
fine. Then, okay, you go live your life. I live mine. Stay away from me. But because it's structural, it means that their hatred of Princess means that they can, you know, go ahead and gentrify her entire community.
Exactly. It's jobs.
That's
it's,
right.
It's everything. It's so much. Like, we saw recently how Florida, like, the college board wanted
yes,
to put
yes.
forth a course.
That's structural racism.
It's structural racism because you don't want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to teach students about the history of America. How can you teach about the history of America if you're not teaching Black history?
Yeah.
We're so imbued into the construction of the country that it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And a lot of people, I was reading recently about the term post-racial, and it came to be after Obama's election in 2008. And a lot of people came forth and they're like, oh, we live in a post-racial world now. And post-racial, like, basically refers to a colorblind world, which I'm just like, no, we don't. We've never lived in a post-racial world just because we have a Black president.
Never.
We've never lived in a post-racial world. I don't think we're close to it. I don't even like the idea of a post-racial world.
Yeah, exactly, because, like, think about it. That's like someone saying, like, that's part of your identity. That's part of your identity. I love who I am.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I say, oh, when I look at you, I don't see color. Like, that's so insulting. Like, I want you to see color. That's who I am.
My skin is beautiful.
Yeah,
see
that's
my
who
color.
I am.
I see you. You see me. Like, we can exist with differences, but
the
point of it is I don't punish people for their differences.
Yes.
But not asking you to not see us. I'm not asking you to not consider a race, or just don't punish us for it.
Yeah.
Don't hold it against us that we're Black.
Yeah.
Or that we're Mexican or whatever.
Right.
Don't hold it against us. Just embrace it and celebrate it. And I actually just wrote an article for the Black Explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And in that article, I talked about Black History Month and how we're 37 years in and we continue to celebrate Black History Month, but then we have all these things happening against us. Our Black people are constantly being disrespected in America every single day, whether it be like at a corporation who allows white people to occupy executive positions when there are Black workers who are equally qualified, but they don't hire them.
Yeah.
They leave them at like hourly wage jobs. Like, and I'm talking about Walmart.
Yeah.
I looked at the statistics and a lot of Black workers work there, but when you look at the executive.
And they don't allow them to unionize either.
Yeah.
Don't allow them to unionize. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of that, I consider that brutality against America, against Black Americans.
Yeah.
I consider that deep-rooted brutality.
Yeah.
Because you're starving families.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that.
You're separating families. It doesn't just end at brutality. I can go on here all day about it. There's just so much to, like, consider.
Yeah. And I like what you said because a lot of people don't think about poverty as violence, but poverty is violence because poverty literally kills because right now there's like, for instance, there's 23 to 25 million people in this country that can't afford health insurance. This country does not have universal health insurance. So there are still 23 to 25 million people in this country that don't have health insurance. One in five children in this country goes to bed every single night hungry, without dinner, right? This poverty is violence, as you said. It is because poverty leads to death. Poverty even leads people, right? If somebody cannot find a job or they don't have the means to whatever, then they might turn to the streets, right?
Turn to
an underground economy.
Yeah.
And that can turn violent very quickly, right?
And that's how police brutality intersects to poverty.
Yes.
When Black people are kept out of these positions, then they turn to the streets, and they turn because you just want to make a living for their families. Then the police are called, and then a Black person dies.
Exactly.
It's so systematic. It's like, it blows my mind. Every single, the deeper I got into research, the more I read, I just, you wouldn't believe it.
Like,
it's so systematic, honestly.
Yeah, definitely, no doubt. And I want to play a song because you brought up something. I just want to play a song in our first break. But because you mentioned something about Tyre Nichols when you have that sheer ignorance where people, the first thing, oh, see, it can't be whatever because it's five Black cops. That when you are part of a system that is structurally racist and I would say also structurally white supremacist in this country, there's a strong fabric of white supremacy in this country. If you are not careful, right, there you will find people that are under that supremacy start to act it out, right?
Yeah.
Start to act it out. So those it didn't matter that they were Black. Those Black officers knew damn well
yeah.
they weren't doing that to a white guy. If Tyrell Nichols was white, they know that there would be accountability. But because he was black, they knew they could get around with it. And also because they are within that police department, they know that, hey, like, it was like, hey, like, look, white guy, white police officers, I can do the same thing. You guys, you know, I'm part of this club. I'm part of this gang.
So it's
just absolutely absurd. Because as the late Greg Gregory said one time, he said, when's the last time you've seen a black police officer go and brutalize some white boy? He said, you don't hear about it. He said, because they know. Black police officers know that they're going to be held accountable to the full extent of the law.
And they'll probably be punished harsher than if the white officer killed a police.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about
it. And with a quickness.
No doubt. Extremely quick.
They will not be protected.
No doubt about it.
At all.
That's right.
And they know.
Yep.
That's why they think it's okay to attack black people.
Yeah. Yep. No doubt about it. So I want to, really quick, I want to play, and you know, I'm glad you brought it up. I want to play this song by KRS-One called "Black Cop," which came out some years ago, where KRS-One did exactly what you did, you know, just in a 3-minute song, where he connected the dots in terms of the intersectionality and so forth, and that just because someone is black in America, you know, and a police officer, they can, you know, carry out the same type of brutality that white police officers do and often do. So here's a Black Cop. Black Cop by the inimitable KRS-One, classic song, but breaks it down. I mean, and even connects it to even apartheid South Africa, you know, where he said that there were black cops that were enlisted by the white minority regime in South Africa, you know, to brutalize their own people. You know, they were an instrument of the system. And so those black police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, they were an instrument. They were tools, and it's just sad that those black cops, you know, didn't even realize that they're just tools. They're expendable tools by the system, and so once they did that, you know, the white people that make it possible, that make it possible for them to do what they did, you know, they washed their hands of them. Like, good, you know, that's fine. You can get thrown away. You accomplish your mission. You killed, you know, another young black brother, but you know, don't expect us to come save you. Don't expect us to come save you. You know, you got caught on the camera, and that's it. So, go on, yeah.
You know, before we went to play the song, you talked about, you mentioned the word intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't research a little about it, but it has come to my attention what it stands for, because I watched the TED Talk.
Kimberly Crenshaw.
Yes.
Yep.
Immediately, yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I watched it, I was so mesmerized by her speech and by what she stood for. And, you know, I didn't know about the intersectionality that black women face in America when it comes to violence and then sexism and then racism and how that overlaps, but I just could never put a word to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say that's a good tech talk for anyone to watch to become, like, aware of not just police brutality against black people, but especially police brutality against women.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, not that they get left out of the conversation, but it's not a focal point.
Right.
Because black women are really one of the most unprotected
mm-hmm.
groups of people in America.
Mm-hmm.
They're unprotected in their homes. They're unprotected when they go to the hospital
mm-hmm.
because the stereotype that black women feel no pain.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Black, even I, as a black woman, I fear to have a baby because I'm like, in the hospital, lots of the mortality rate for black women and their babies are crazy high.
Yeah.
And it's so scary. And they're so unprotected, especially, like, we have Breonna Taylor and how she was killed in her home by police officers.
Yeah. Yep. Sandra Blonde.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, and it's just, and that narrative, and you know, come on, I mean, that's the narrative, oh, she went in hunger. No, she did. You saw the traffic stop with Sandra Bland. You saw how she was harassed, and we're supposed to believe that she got, you know, put into jail, and next thing you know, she killed herself? No.
No.
She was assassinated, and it's just, and there's no recourse whatsoever for those police officers. I mean, you look, I mean, even... This was like, you know, you were just, you know, I remember before I went on air, you know, you dated how when you were born, you were born in 2004.
Yeah.
But in 2010, you know, you were 6 years old. In 2010 in Detroit, Michigan, there was a 7-year-old black girl
mm-hmm.
by the name of Ayanna Stanley Jones that was murdered by police. They went, they bust into her family's home,
yeah.
you know, claiming they were looking for a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
There was no criminal in the house. Nobody in the house was wanted or had a warrant whatsoever. Went in there, started shooting. She was laying down on the couch. A bullet entered the base of her head, exited out, and she bled out to death in front of her parents. And the police officer that murdered her, his name was Officer Joseph Weekly. He was given administrative leave for a period of time, which basically meant he was getting paid not being there. He now, as we sit here right now, he is back. He has been reinstated, and he is back on the beat in Detroit as a police officer. This black girl is gone. Her life ripped away from her. Her parents had their daughter's life ripped away, you know, so she didn't have an opportunity to live out her dreams, live out her life. You know what I'm saying?
She's my age, you know,
huh?
She's my age. She could have been where I am right now.
Yep.
And she's not.
Yep. And she's gone. And she's gone. And she's gone. And so, and this guy's back on the beat. Back on the beat. Back on the beat. Back on the street, in the uniform, carrying a gun, and so forth. And so.
There's no form of reform.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So when you mentioned, you know, black women, I mean, it goes all the way down to, you know, adolescents. You know, that are being targeted. No doubt about it.
They're getting tormented at school. Like, I can't remember the last time I felt safe around an officer. Like, I remember I was taking a walk and I saw these two police officers behind me, and I started walking faster. My heart, I don't even know why I was so scared. They didn't do anything. They were talking and laughing, but just the presence of law enforcement just made me.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be another statistic.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing that goes through my mind. Even campus police, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around you because I don't want to be another statistic in your book.
Right.
Like, it's so...
Which you bring up something, and I mean, you bring up a lot of good points. So it brings up something that, you know, someone says, oh, well, you know, yes, police officers are supposed to be here to protect and serve the interests of the community. And so let's think about that. the whole origins of the police started off. The very first police in the United States of America were in the South, and they were called slave patrols.
Yes.
And their job was to protect the interests of slave owners, right?
Yeah.
Of slave masters.
Yeah.
And so if an African, and that's what we are, you know, whether you were born here or not, if you're black, you know, your ancestry goes all the way back to the continent. So those Africans who were black, obviously, if you escaped from your plantation, their job was to go hunt you down.
Yeah.
Because you were the property of those white plantation owners, and they were to hunt you down. And that's the inception of the very first police in this country. And think about it. Hundreds of years later, look at what is going on hundreds of years later. You have to think that those initial slave patrol police officers back then would love what they see now. They would love what they see with George Floyd. Love it, because that's exactly what they did. Because you think back then, obviously, there's no camera phones. What do you think happened when they caught an enslaved African that escaped from their plantation? What do you think happened? We can only imagine. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness gracious.
The discussion about slavery that it's so much insidious than we realize.
Yeah.
We think it's worse, but when you start looking into it, it's disgusting.
It is. It totally is.
It makes your stomach turn. It's just modernized at this point.
Yeah.
It's just very modernized, but it's the same history. Keeps repeating itself constantly, and it just changes with time like everything else, but it's still the same foundation.
Yep.
And we just have to reform. We have to make policies that we have to elect officials into office that are gonna make policies that make it mandatory for police officers to, like you said, psych evaluations.
Yeah.
Like if you're make a registry.
Yeah.
If a police officer that's open to the public. If a police officer is fired or he's put on leave, why was he put on leave?
Yeah.
Why did he go through that? What happened? You put that all out there and make it mandatory that before a police officer is fired, he goes through that system.
Right.
Make it really difficult so that we can root out this from the base of it. You can root out all those bad apples that
right.
don't spoil the whole bunch of them.
Right.
You know? And that's what we have to do.
Yeah. And because, like what you said, and because it is such a critical, because what you just put out there is solutions, right? Solutions.
Yeah.
And because it's such a critical job, you should, you know, like for instance, if you go to Baltimore, the vast majority of white police officers in Baltimore City, and even a lot of black police officers, they don't live in the communities that they police. They don't. So you should be required, at the very least, to live somewhere in the city of Baltimore. But there are white police officers that serve as police officers in Baltimore City that commute in every single day from southern Pennsylvania, Delaware, Harford County, like way out. And so so you should have to, because there's no investment. If you're just policing a community that you don't even live in,
how can you be
you come in there, you know, you piss on the ground, you don't care nothing about it. So I can go and rough it, because these aren't children that I see every single day
exactly.
And so I can just go ahead and treat them any old way. I don't have to worry about a damn thing. You know, I can treat them any old way because I don't necessarily see them as human beings. But if you're living in a community and you're invested, you now are part of the community. So you see them as you should see them as human beings. Like, listen, this is the, you know, so I know him. I don't have to like resort to violence immediately. I can go over there and engage him in conversation.
Yeah.
And this young brother, 14 years old, I can engage him in conversation. Like, listen, man, I know you don't do this. It's going to escalate. Don't do this, and have a conversation. But they immediately turn to violence. I mean, I've been, as a black man, I've had, you know, and this is like after grad school. I mean, I've had white police officers literally tell me, excuse my language, tell me straight up. I was in it was late night in a restaurant waiting to be seated, and there were police officers in the restaurant, and I was looking in the same direction as one of the police officers, and these two white police officers were standing there, and one of them goes, "What the fuck you looking at? You got a fucking problem?" and he put his hand on his baton,
mm-hmm.
like he was about to do something. And my friends were like, listen, like, this is go, like, yo, but that's the kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of mentality
no
that they carry.
Whatsoever.
Yeah, because someone's looking in the direction you're looking, that you're standing in. Are you kidding me?
It's because they have to, that sense of, they go unchecked.
Mm-hmm.
They know.
Yeah.
They just know they can just get away with anything.
Yep,
it's
exactly.
For them to take out their anger. It's like if they're having problems wherever they come to their jobs and they think that they're just going to take out the anger on anybody, but that's not how the world works.
Yeah.
That's not how the world should work.
Yeah.
What should exist on it just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about it just makes me so...
Yeah. Right. And I'll say this. I want to tell you this, actually. This is an area that I've studied for a long time. Media, you know, I am an independent journalist since 2009. I'm so hearing you. I'm so happy that we have in the next few years people like you going into the field of journalism, because I can think of like some of the great journalists that I respect are the ones that actually stepped out and they report on things despite the fact that at the time it wasn't seen as popular, you're supposed to whatever, but they did their job. So like there, for instance, there's the late Gary Webb, if you can remember, he wrote the Dark Alliance book, and he's the one that broke. You know, he was a white journalist in California, and he's the one that broke the story behind how a lot of crack cocaine was getting to black communities, and it was being brought in by the federal government.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? FBI, CIA, they were selling crack cocaine to the black community and using the money from the proceeds of that crack cocaine to finance death squads in Central America, in Central America, in places like El Salvador and so forth, and you know, Nicaragua, and this really happened. This is American history, and this guy Gary Webb, who's now deceased, he was the reporter that reported on that, and he broke he did a series of articles on this, breaking this, and without that work, we're not even that his work led to. Congressional hearings in Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how important your work is as a journalist.
Yeah. Journalism started on the foundation of always telling the truth. It started as watchdogs. We were here to monitor those in power and those
mm-hmm.
who abuse their power and keep them in check.
Yeah.
Who is gonna keep the people in power in check?
Yeah.
Us. That's our job.
Yeah.
So journalism cannot stray away from that.
Right.
If someone is acting out of line, if someone's putting someone else's life in the lines, we have to step in and be like, you can't do that.
That's right.
And publicize that. That is our job to sort of.
That's right.
You can't stray from that. It's not about what's popular. It's about what's right.
Yeah.
That's the foundation of journalism. It's
that's
about
right.
what's right.
No
it's about
doubt.
Protecting the people's lives.
Yeah.
So that's why I got into it, and that's why I continue to try to get as involved as I can in this. And
yeah.
that's why I'm here today.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. And you're following the legacy of, I don't know if you know, the late, great Ida B. Wells, you know,
yes,
one of the co-founders of the NAACP, but she was a journalist, and she went around the country went around the South documenting lynchings, and so
yeah.
without her work, like she's the one that did, you know, painstaking work of documenting lynchings, and so, you know, she was doing reports that, you know, this week in the South, you know, six black people were lynched,
mm-hmm.
you know, because black women were being lynched back then as well. Black children were being lynched. You know, last week, 14 black people were lynched. And so, and then she was invited to Europe to go from city to city, country to country in Europe, talking about her work and exposing and saying, like, listen, what you think you know about the United States, it's not a complete version of whatever. Over there, They are brutalizing us. They are murdering us. They are assassinating
yeah.
us. And so they are lynching us. And so she went. And so then Europeans like, what? That's going on. And so, Ida B. Wells. Ida B. Wells. Yeah.
In addition to Ida B. Wells, I wrote this long paper about Mary Ann Shad Carey, and she's also one of my. I love her. She's one of my heroes in black journalism. And she was around like the same time as Ida B. Wells, like 1860 something.
Yeah.
And she went to Canada. And then she came back. She's one of the first black-owned newspapers by a black woman. She
right.
did that. She did that for no matter what anyone did. She made school. She was a teacher. She believed in education. And I love that. Why I want to follow her legacy. I want to do what she does.
That's right.
And I want to make her proud in spirit.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's why I do what I do.
No doubt what she is. No doubt that she is proud. You know, from the ancestors. I want to add, as we draw to a close. So you know, you started the ball rolling with some solutions, and then you know, I mentioned, you know, the fact that police officers should be required to live in the communities that they police.
Mm-hmm.
Any other solutions that you've, you know, thought about? You know, I believe one of the solutions I throw out there, and, you know, I think that there should be community tribunals. I think that these police officers, you know, should be tried within the community. A lot of times they'll move the case outside of the community.
Yeah.
But I think that there should be people, you know, there should be community tribunals. I think that the people in the community should have a say.
Mm-hmm.
And because oftentimes, you know, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if police officers knew this was potentially what was going to happen, they would think twice before they pull that taser out and tase somebody 8 times like they did the brother in California,
yeah,
you know, back in January, and killed him, sent him into cardiac arrest because they tased him so many times. They would think twice about pulling that gun out or putting somebody in a chokehold like they did Eric Garner,
yeah,
and choking him to death, putting their foot on the back of someone's throat like they did George Floyd, and until, you know, until he suffocated and died, like a horrible, agonizing death. That's torture. That's torture. Mm-hmm. There has to be accountability that you will sit behind bars for the rest of your life, and you will think about what you just did. You took a human life. There's got to be. I mean, it is repugnant. You mentioned the justice system. There has to be accountability in the justice system. The justice system has not worked for us in a long, long time. And we have these little victories once in a while, but in general, the justice system does not work for us, because if you can have somebody that, you know, a white police officer murder somebody, and the very least, they, you know, the very most they might get is a slap on the wrist, or they might do, let's say that even you do 4 years in jail. 4 years for his life that he just murdered somebody?
Yeah.
That's not, but, you know, if a civilian did that, they'd be facing murder one.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be facing murder one or murder two. They'd be doing decades in prison,
mm-hmm,
decades. And to have to sit in that prison cell and to think about that the rest of your life. No, yeah. That's the very least. So, any other solutions that you thought about it?
For my generation, I don't even just for my generation, for everybody out there, I think it's really, really important. And I feel like I sound like a broken record, but you need to educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take time out of your day. I'm not asking you to 24/7, like, sit there and learn about it, but you need to take time out of your day to think about these things, to consider these things, and get involved in your local community to see what's going on. Get involved with your local officials, like, put pressure. We need pressure to be applied.
That's right.
We need people to step out. We go to protests, do all these things, but do it safely,
yeah,
at the same time.
Yeah.
But we need to step out. Maybe just like once in a month makes all the difference, because we need joint effort.
Yeah.
If you put in just a little bit of effort, someone puts a little bit of effort, and effort, so that's joint effort. That makes a difference.
That's right.
So that I can just only say, educate yourself so you can do better, you know?
Yeah. And as you said, like that, when you brought up something, I mean, you're putting like a lot of hit. I don't know if you know this, but you're putting, you know, as a historian, you know, during the civil rights movement, you know, things to kind of get, there's kind of like this revisionist history. And the fact of the matter that during the civil rights movement, there were tens and tens of thousands of protests and sit-ins,
mm-hmm,
but it was the consistency. There was like oftentimes always something happening. This week there was this week. So sometimes the protests or the might have been only like 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been 15 people. And then other times it might have been 250,000 people, as we,
yeah,
saw in March on Washington, or it might have been 50,000 people. But that consistency, that every single week there was something going on somewhere in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
This protest was, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. It raises the specter of consciousness, and then allows you to mobilize and then to organize people towards actions.
And I understand that it can be taxing emotionally, but we got to where we are today because we never stopped.
That's right.
If during the civil rights movement, if they ever took a week off and they ever stopped, we probably wouldn't be where we are today.
That's right.
So I understand that even to me, it is emotionally taxing to read all these things that are going on against black people, but we can't stop because if we stop, we risk going backwards, even further backwards. We can't ever stop because they never stop.
That's right.
When we stop, they don't stop killing us. So
that's right.
We can't stop fighting them because they're never going to stop fighting us. So
can't stop, won't stop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Can't stop, won't stop. I like that. I like that. No doubt about it. We cannot stop. This has been great. I want to play this song, and then on the other end, Princess and I will sign off. But I want to play another song. This is another song by KRS-One called Sound of the Police, and it goes a little something like this.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beat. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beat.
The sound of the police, KRS-One again. Again, folks, if you've never seen that, if you never heard that song, please go on YouTube and watch the video. The video is powerful, powerful.
I was mesmerized. First time seeing it.
Yeah, and I grew up, this is the kind of music I grew up with, you know, when I was a young teenager, 13, 14. This is the kind we were talking before the radio, before we started, about hip-hop. This is when at a time when hip-hop was very new, and so they would play stuff on the radio. So we got this stuff, and it politicized us as young boys and girls. You know, it politicized us, and it radicalized us, and you know, got us to think about social justice issues very early on. But now, you know what I'm saying, they learn their lesson. So they say, oh, we're not going to expose them to this. You know, we're going to expose them to misogyny and senseless violent stuff where, mm-hmm. you know, songs about directing, you know, violence against people that look like you and so forth. And but yeah, that's the power of music. That's no doubt about it. You know, so I want to say, I think you did an excellent job. I'm looking forward to next week. You know, we have another show next week. It's going to be on the video program, Liberated Perspectives, next week. And, you know, so I'll let you have, you know, the last word, Kwazi. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for having me on. It's fun talking about this. I had a lot of insight and perspective. I gained a lot of insight and perspective researching about this. And this is why I love doing this, because I get to learn so much. And talking with you, you are so intelligent and insightful about it. And I'm always looking forward to hearing what you have to say. So thank you for letting me do this. And I look forward to next week.
Appreciate it. You're a natural. I got to say, you're a natural. I mean, I've had a lot of students do this for the first time. And you're definitely a natural. Definitely natural.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing these, you know, at the very least every other week, if not every week, you know.
I look forward to it.
Right on. So for Princess, I'm Solomon. You've been listening to Your World News on the Your World News Media Collective and on the Nimbaro Cultural Center Media Collective. Until next time, peace.